So today's case is number 3 in the Blue Cliff Record and number 36 in the Book of Equanimity. The case reads similarly in both books. It says, Great Master Mazu was unwell. The superintendent of the monastery asked him, How is your reverence feeling these days? The great master said, Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. And this is the verse that follows in the Book of Equanimity. Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha, stars fall, thunders crash, or thunder crashes. The mirror faces shapes without subjectivity. The pearl in a bowl rolls by itself. Don't you see? Before the hammer and anvil, gold of 100 temperance. Under the scissors and ruler, a bolt of silk. So there are many giants in the Zen pantheon, and Ma Zu is one of them. Although he only taught for 10 years, he is said to have had, depending on the source material you read, somewhere from 80 to 140 Dharma heirs. That's sort of remarkable when you think of it, for 10 years. You know, the last 7, 8, 9 years of his life, it must have been constant ceremonies to for transmission. Zhao Zhou told his students that he had met 80 of Ma Zu's heirs and approved each one of them, which is mighty praise indeed. After Ma Zu's death, his heirs spread out throughout the lands, and Zen bloomed and flowered both from his side of the lineage chart, the Lin Chi or Rinzai side, and from his contemporary side, Shi To, the Soto or Sao Dung lineage. So Ma Zu lived in the 8th century, and his primary teacher was Nan Jue. One time, the teacher found the young student, and you've already heard this story, but it's a good story, so I thought to say it again. One time, the teacher found the young student sitting by himself in the meditation hall. The teacher said, Great young worthy, why are you sitting in meditation? Ma Zu, the student, said, I wish to become a Buddha. The teacher then picked up a roofing tile before the hall and began to rub it on a rock. Ma Zu asked, What are you doing? And the teacher said, I'm making a mirror of this roofing tile. Ma Zu said, How can you make a mirror by polishing a roofing tile? And the teacher replied to the question with one of his own, saying, Can a Buddha be created by sitting in meditation? He then continued on, saying, Are you practicing meditation, or are you practicing Buddhahood? Practicing meditation is not a matter of sitting, standing, walking, or lying down. Practicing Buddhahood does not have a fixed form. In the midst of transitory change, you should neither grasp nor reject. If you keep Buddha seated, you are killing her. If you cling to any form, that is not attaining to the inner principle. So when we practice to get something, when we sit with a goal in mind, then our practice is no different than rubbing a roofing tile on a rock to make a mirror. When practicing in this limited way, we may actually get what we want. But I doubt at bottom if that is truly what is needed. Our wants are usually directed by what we do and don't have. They are dedicated to the paradigm of subject and object, of self and other, of you over there, and me here. These types of intentions are married to fixed shapes and forms, to a right way and wrong way. They are married to correct and incorrect. But when we let go of our picking and choosing and sit with open hands and hearts, when we let go of what we want and what we think we need, when we soften into our Zazen and let it shape us, we sit as Buddhas, and we realize that Buddha is no fixed thing. Buddha is simply the cold bones of a chilling morning. Buddha is simply the swirling of the leaves as they fall from alders and maples. And Buddha is the lone call of the screech owl as we tumble into bed at night. To stay open and forget ourselves in each activity, in every activity, from flushing the toilet to saying meal gathas, from stumbling to evening zazen in the dark to washing the bowls. To forget ourselves is the very heart mind of absorption that allows within and without, us and them, and you and me to fall away. The flower of absorption has no one particular fixed form. It is like this morning's rain blanketing the earth, being absorbed by trees and bushes, by roses and shrubs, and by the great earth herself as the day warms. When we move through the day, not fixed or identifying with self or other, we become like the earth, absorbing the wet of rain through every cell. This non-fixed, non-identifying mind is, as the verse states, facing shapes and forms without subjectivity. This, however, does not mean we sit in a quietistic mind state drifting in empty numbness, which is no different than a slumbering, amorphous daydreaming. This is why, stated or not, we always sit with a question. The question, who hears? What is Mu? Where is Mu? The question itself is our effort. In this way, though the mind will quiet, it won't be quietistic and passive. And though you will become more and more emptied, you won't be numb or lost in a fog-filled daydream. Just simply forget your intentions, hopes, and goals, and dedicate yourself to your one and only practice, which in Sesshin is your life. So before getting back to the case, I'd like to read you these words of encouragement from the record of Ma Zhu, and it's from the book called Sun-Faced Buddha. This is from one of his sermons. It's just numbered. It's sermon number 3. It says, if one wants to know the way directly, ordinary mind is the way. What is meant by ordinary mind? No activity, no right or wrong, no grasping or rejecting, neither terminable nor permanent, without worldly or holy. Just like now, whether walking, standing, sitting, or reclining, responding to situations and dealing with people as they come, every single thing is the way. The way is identical with the Dharma Dhatu. Out of sublime functions as numerous as sands of the Ganges, none of them is outside the Dharma Dhatu. If that was not so, how could it have been said that the mind ground is a Dharma gate and that it is an inexhaustible lamp? So again, the case and the verse. Ma Zhu was unwell The superintendent of the monastery asked him, "How is your reverence feeling these days?" Ma Zu said, "Sun face Buddha, moon face Buddha." And then the verse says, "Sun face, moon face, stars fall, thunder crashes. The mirror faces shapes without subjectivity. The pearl on a tray rolls by itself. Don't you see? Before the hammer and anvil, gold of 100 temperings. Under the scissors and ruler, a bolt of silk." So right before this dialogue took place, Ma Zu was walking through a grove of trees with a student when they came upon a flat-floored cave. Ma Zu said, "Return my old and useless body to this cave next month." The community knew that their old teacher was deathly ill, and this is the context of the question that the superintendent asked. And the feeble-bodied Ma Zu said, "Sun face Buddha, moon face Buddha." In the Buddha Name Sutra, there are sun face Buddha, moon face Buddha, and over 1,100 other Buddha names. It is said that the sun face Buddha lives for 1,800 years, and the moon face Buddha lives for only a single day. This is interesting information, but I'm not sure really how helpful it is. I imagine if you pay attention to your own lives, you could easily come up with 1,100 Buddha names. And some would be long-lived Buddhas and others not very. There could be Hurting Knees Buddha. That is a long-lived Buddha in our tradition. And if some of you knew that before you got into it, you probably would have gone somewhere else. There could be Happy Buddha, Sad Buddha, Sick Buddha, Healthy Buddha, Baby Buddha, and so on. In each phase of your life, there are Buddhas. In each day, Buddhas. In each hour, or even if we pay close attention, in each moment. There are Buddha worlds on each particle of dust, or on a grain of sand, or even on a crumb of bread. In the dining hall, we have a calligraphy that says, "In that crumb you hold exists the entire universe." And this universe is inhabited by innumerable Buddhas. Ma Zu, however, said something very specific. He said, "Sun face Buddha, moon face Buddha." What do you think his point was? Of all the Buddhas of 1,100, why sun face, why moon face? And the Blue Cliff Record commentary says his response was not a teaching for the superintendent to ponder or to learn from. So why sun face? Why moon face? This is the first no-see-um I've actually seen all week. That's no-see-um Buddha. And right in the eye of that no-see-um, right in that one single eye, are innumerable Buddhas. Do you want to look? It's amazing. You can see hundreds of them. They're reflecting. I think they don't just have a round eye. I think they have that sort of eye that has facets. So it's sort of reflecting and refracting all over the place. Well, and if I drink them, it'll be shit Buddha tomorrow. If I'm lucky enough to shit tomorrow. Yeah. So the third line in the verse gives us a direction to lean towards in wise sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. It says the mirror faces shapes without subjectivity. This mirror has no front or back. And unlike other mirrors which reflect a female when a female is before it, or a child when a child faces it, or a tall person, this mirror shows what has no subject, no object, and no interaction. This mirror presents your original face before your parents were born. It isn't swayed by fine language or rhetoric. It isn't confused by perfume or makeup. And it isn't fazed by money, power, or fame. This is the mirror that hangs in the main room of the original dwelling. And it sees what is before it. It sees what is before eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, or mind. It reflects what is before thought, before feelings, or before sensations. And as a comment in the Book of Equanimity says, it can't be fooled a bit. Even the president-elect of the United States stands naked before it. And the verse next says, the pearl in a bowl or on a tray rolls by itself. And I take this to mean it can go either way. First, you do not have to do anything or be a certain way to present your very own Buddha face. It is always showing itself. It is always showing itself as you. All that is necessary is for you to let mu do mu, to forget yourself, and the flower will naturally absorb the moisture. All that is necessary is for you to let the sounds fill you and let the numbers count you. And secondly, and this is an adjunct to the first way, you cannot stop the rolling. You cannot grab it, impede it, or slow it down. It does what it is, or it is what it does. When the superintendent asked, how are you feeling? Ma Zhu showed the fullness of himself, saying, sun face, moon face. There isn't denial in this statement, projection, hesitation, or worry. He is simply and surely what he is and isn't. He is simply what he has been and never will be. His statement is the summation of a life of practice. It is the summation of a life lived in the open with nothing to hide and nothing to guide. The life lived with hands open and a heart warm and tender. He knew he didn't have to have stories or personal projections to sustain him in his last days. His was the immediacy and power of stars falling and thunder crouching. That was his posture. That was his breath. And that's what looked right outside of his eyes and chewed with his teeth. So here I'd like to read you something Eiken Roshi wrote many years ago, reflecting on a visit he and Anne had to Japan to see their old teachers, Yamada Koen Roshi and Yasutani Hakuin Roshi. Roshi wrote, Yamada Koen Roshi and his teacher, Yasutani Hakuin Roshi, had a similar dialogue to that of the superintendent and Ma Zhu. When Yasutani Roshi was retired at a temple in Kyushu, Yamada Roshi invited him to the Sunun Zendo in Kamakura to lead a Jikai ceremony. Students who take part in such ceremonies accept the 16 Bodhisattva precepts. and acknowledge the Buddha Shakyamuni as their teacher. Yasutani Roshi arrived at Yamada Roshi's home adjacent to the Zendo on the Saturday afternoon before the ceremony. Returning from his office in Tokyo, Yamada Roshi found his old teacher sitting on the sofa of his living room. "Oh, Roshi," said Yamada Roshi, "how are you feeling?" "Well," said Yasutani Roshi, "when I'm sitting down, I'm all right. But when I stand up, I'm very short of breath." Next day, Ann Aiken and I, and this is Roshi writing, gathered with others for the ceremony. Yasutani Roshi appeared in his brocade robes and seated himself before us. I had a sense of his great age. He was 88. A rather wizened body and a splendid costume. We were startled at how hard he was breathing and concerned that many minutes passed before he was able to speak. The ceremony went well, however, and that evening the old Roshi was driven to the home of his daughter in Tokyo. Next day he was feeling ill, so he stayed in bed. The following day, Tuesday, he was well enough to get up and go downtown for a bit of shopping for the Kyushu temple. The following morning, his daughter entered his bedroom and found him awake. She stepped out of the room to get a wet towel for his morning ablutions, and when she returned, she found he had died. That evening, we had a preliminary memorial service for him at the Sanun Zendo. Yamada Roshi gave a Teisho and chose this case 3 of the Blue Cliff Record as his theme. He told us about his conversation with his teacher in his living room and said, "That was Yasutani Roshi's sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha, when he said, 'When I'm sitting down, I'm all right. But when I stand up, I'm very short of breath.'" There's one last paragraph here too. Let me just see if when I was reading it this morning, I found it to be really touching, but let me just see. He just says, "I realize," you know, again, this is Aiken Roshi talking, "I realized that the heavy breathing we heard at the onset of this last Jikai ceremony was in fact the breathing of a dying man, which Yasutani Roshi brought under control with heroic effort in order to complete his ceremony for our sakes. He really died at that time, it seems, but something kept going until the ceremony was over and his promises to the Kyushu temple were honored. Our old teacher had descended one last time into the cave of the Blue Dragon for our sakes, and we did not know what was happening there before our eyes and ears. Today, however," he says, Aiken Roshi says, "I cannot take it lightly." So that is sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. "When I am sitting down, I'm all right. But when I stand up, I'm very short of breath." And sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced, that is the gold that fills the land. That is the silk from a single loom. It appears in different colors and textures, and it comes in varying tastes and sounds depending on circumstances and conditions. And in fact, there is no way to avoid it. And when you look in the mirror, when you look in the mirror that has no stand, and if you look very closely, you'll notice that you are clothed not only in the mist and the dew, but also in the moon and the stars, and that you shine more brightly than gold or silk. And that is only because of the great teachings from Yasutani, from Yamada, and from Aiken that we're able to be clothed that way. Without them, I think we'd be naked.